Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden, and you're listening to, rather unbelievably, episode 13 of In Anything at the Minute, the Honest Actors podcast. I am going to avoid saying the obvious things about the number 13, but I will say there's going to be a huge announcement later today about the future of the podcast. So if you're listening before 10:30 a.m. on the 29th of February 2016, you really should come back, because a huge announcement will be going live on iTunes, on the website, on Facebook and on Twitter at 10:30 a.m. For now though, I'm going to let you enjoy episode 13 with Justine Mitchell. Okay, so first of all, thanks very much for agreeing to do it. And also thanks for fixings for lunch. You're the first actor I've interviewed that's provided fixings. And I'm noting that as a challenge and indeed an expectation of all future interviewees.
There you go.
So set that up. Start off, as I've started off with everybody else, how did you become an actor? How did you get into acting to begin with?
I don't remember.
You've always done it?
Yeah. I don't remember not wanting to act. I always wanted to. It was an internal thing. I liked performing. I liked attention. I hear people being interviewed and they go, oh, I just saw Shakespeare when I was 12 and you know, my mum bought me, and I was like, oh God, no, that wasn't me. I was just a show off. I wanted attention. It made me feel like I existed, and it ignited stuff in me. And yeah, that's why. I remember the first thing I ever did was a sketch in school when I was like 7 or 8, and my dad helped me write it, and I played Margaret Thatcher, and I got laughs, and it was just like, I exist, this rocks. So it's, yeah, and then I remember like seeing Panto. I suppose the first stuff I saw was Panto in Dublin, like Gaiety.
And did seeing pantomime make you think, I want to do that?
Yeah, I liked it. I found it very difficult to watch because I just wanted to be there. I wanted to be doing it. I was just obsessed with performing. Yeah, you know the way like other people would go to see plays at that age, and you would enjoy the whole thing. You'd have an experience of being told a story. I wasn't interested. I wanted to be them. And so it's been a journey from there to now. Why I do acting is completely different.
So what's the journey beginning then? So you're a 7-year-old who's done a sketch. You've seen a pantomime in Dublin. Is it something you approach your parents about? Do you go and say, listen, I really want to do this, and do they get you into a class? Or is it something you do kind of in your bedroom until the time comes when you can do it on a stage somewhere else?
Yeah, lots of bedroom work. You know, a lot of hairbrush, singing into hairbrushes and all that, and talking to yourself and stories and all that. And school plays, couldn't keep me out of school plays. But then, quite crucially, I was already a little show-off. Then my parents moved from Dublin to Hong Kong, and I was 12, and that's a hell of an age. And that kind of, it was already fairly, the desire to... a need for attention was already pretty big. It was supercharged by that move, and I did loads of acting in the school in Hong Kong, and I acted myself though as well. I arrived as a little Irish girl, 12-year-old Irish girl. By the time I was like 12 and a half, I was coming home and I was going, hi mum, how are you? She was like, what? What is that accent? I was like, what accent? What? I needed to fit in. I needed to, I guess I wrote a character for myself and became like a young English girl who had never, I'd barely been to Heathrow.
So you were doing what you remember, what you thought at the time was an English accent, but retrospectively it might have been nothing approaching an English accent.
You know what? You could be absolutely right. God, I never thought about that. I was trying to imitate everyone who was just around me. I just didn't, there wasn't, everyone was either Australian or English. So I just, cleansed myself.
And you said you were a show off then, outside of the context of, say, school plays as well. Was that something that was throughout your life? You were the person that wanted to be the centre of attention in classes, outside of class, in the playground?
It was, it's different from centre of attention. I didn't particularly want to be centre of attention. It made me feel like I existed. You had some sort of, you were in charge of how you were being presented to the world. And how you presented yourself. Literally, you had a script, you know? So there was I suppose that feeling of being in charge of yourself was very addictive, because I think most children don't feel in charge of themselves, and I certainly did not. You know, it's a big, scary thing being a kid.
So you're doing this, but obviously at the same time you're not letting your schoolwork slip. Like a lot of people I chat to, sometimes they say, oh, you know, I was useless academically, but you already said you went on to college. So you must have been keeping other plates spinning at the same time.
Yeah, I coasted and I was bright. And so I coasted, and when I needed to, I really pulled my finger out, and especially with A-levels and stuff, I like just worked really hard in the last 6 months, you know, and was able to get good A-levels.
So why not go straight into drama school? Was it, at that point, was that not a real option?
I think I had a lot of academic friends, and the school I went to was quite academic, and I did toy with the idea. I'm so glad I didn't. I am so glad I didn't. I did regret it for a while, but I would have just been eaten up. I would have been a mess. I was a mess anyway. A bit of a mess anyway. But I would, oh my goodness. I like zero sense of who I was. I left Hong Kong and came back to Dublin, and I really didn't know.
Were you still the little English girl?
Then suddenly I was an English girl in Dublin, and I still hadn't been to Heathrow, or I'd just been to departures like Terminal 2. I mean, it was ridiculous. People were going, where are you from in England? I was like, I'd never been there.
Was this Trinity?
Yeah.
And did you find that going into drama school after that, did you find that you'd learnt a lot of the things you needed, a lot of the skills you needed in Trinity, or did drama school feel like a massive step up after being involved in the players?
No, I didn't learn that much in drama school.
Do you feel as an actor, university prepared you as well as drama school? Or did you learn very little from both?
No, I mean, college was different because it was so, you were just more autonomous, and you could ignite the anarchy within you, you know, you just want to do a play, let's do a play, you know, and lots of people, let's do a play right here, right now. And some of it was awful, and some of it was even more awful, but some of it was quite good, you know.
Right, and so when you're doing all that, is it kind of still a hobby? Is it still, you know, this is this thing I've always done in the background, but it's not something I can do for a living? Or even at that age, were you like, oh, this is clearly what I'm going to do with my life?
You know, I was going to do it. I just didn't know how I was going to do it. No, I was always going to do it. I was always going to do it, yeah.
And so you go to drama school as a kind of way to take the next step, really?
Yeah, because I just didn't know how to do it. And also because it's interesting, the nationality thing, you know, I was in Ireland still, but was I going to be an Irish actress? I didn't think that was possible, but I couldn't be an English actress either, because I, you know, what the fuck am I going to do? I just didn't know. And I didn't know how I didn't know about agents. I didn't know anything about that. But there was this 1 year course in this place called Webber Douglas. And I thought, well, I can't do 3 years.
You wanted to get out there and do it. You didn't want to do any more than you had to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe I should have gone for, you know, a longer training, but who knows? God knows. I don't know what I would have learned, because I think you learn by doing, you know. And I certainly didn't know what was up when I started finally doing it.
Do you remember then, let's not dwell on the experience of drama school, let's jump to the end. Do you remember what the first job was you got after you came out of Webber Douglas?
It was Ivanov at the Almeida, and I played, I mean, I just about played a human being in it. I was, you know, moving furniture, and, you know, as a girl at a party. And
at that age, I mean, it's probably quite hard to cast your mind back to what you were thinking at that time, but
I was obsessed. I was obsessed with myself. I can remember.
Okay, so what were your expectations of an acting career? What did you expect, or how did you expect it to unfold? What was your kind of, what was a timeline? What were realistic expectations? You know, what kind of things did you hope for?
Oh, they had changed from, you know, when I was like 7 year old in my bedroom, I wanted an Oscar. I mean, that's what it was all about. I wanted to get an Oscar. And by then it had kind of changed. I want to get paid. I want to keep on getting paid. And I'd like to not have to worry about doing work as a receptionist or, you know.
Fairly realistic for someone of that age then.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess, I mean, I mean,
you're a massive failure, according to your seven-year-old self. But according to your 22-year-old self, you haven't done too badly.
Yeah, I mean, because I think you just know it's a business by then, and it's work, and it's work. You want to get a paycheck, and that's for me was, yeah, if you can just get paid.
So I'm going to, I've said this to everybody, and people who are listening will get bored of this. The interviews are not characterized by discussions of work. And so in order to kind of get it out of the way, what I say to people is, what is the thing, the job that you're most proud of, if it's possible for you to narrow it down to one?
God. I'd love to think it hasn't happened yet. But so far, I suppose, I'm most proud of. At the time, I was like the most emotional and the most proud of was when I did my first play in Dublin, when I got my first Irish job. And because that was bound up with so much, because this job is so vocational. It's so bound up with who you are and your emotions and your baggage. And I find it really hard to divorce the two. And so the perils with admitting it is a vocation is that you are, sometimes you index link your happiness to it, right? And I know that's not healthy, but I just find it hard not to be that way about it. It just is the way it is.
So going back to Dublin then, was that?
So going back to Dublin, the reason I say that, maybe that it was at the Gate Theatre, it was my first job there. There was something about being accepted. I loved the job as well, and I knew I was doing a good job in it. And
what was the job?
It was a play by Neil LaBute, and he directed it, and it was called Bash. And there were three plays, and I was just in the last one. There were two monologues, and then a duologue, and I was in the duologue with a best friend from college, and so it was all sorts, and I was really proud. I was proud of the work. I was proud of being in Ireland. I was proud of, I had seen so many plays at the Gate.
In this case, you were actually being an American actor.
Well, yes, he has a really American. I do that quite a lot. Yes, exactly. You know. I guess that. I mean, there's so many. I'm so proud of every fucking job I get because it's against the odds.
You're winning.
Yeah, you're winning. You're like, that's amazing. They didn't hire someone who's on telly. They hired me. And so, you know, good on them. That's really brave of them. And yeah, you're winning because it's really hard. Every job you get is a miracle.
So what's the longest then, interesting segue, that you've gone without work in your career to memory?
There was one really long time, but I opted out. I got so, you know, I thought I would punish the profession and it would notice, you know, like a friend, like it was a boyfriend. You know, and I would stop coming home and the boyfriend would notice, right? But the boyfriend doesn't give a shit. he really doesn't give a shit.
He moved on.
It's that kind of boyfriend's never going to love you back.
No.
So this, so I went, I'm leaving.
And how long was that then?
Do you know? I don't know, but I would say it was like 9 months or something like that, you know.
And what then tempted you out of retirement?
Darling, the crowds. Well, no one had noticed. I wish I was as in charge of my life as that, you know. I mean, because I think I was as, it was my emotions that had gone, screw you, I'm going to get a job. And I was really down. I was really down about the whole thing. And I wanted to be in charge of something, and I felt I wasn't getting work, and so I went, screw you, I'm going to go do something else.
Do you still feel a sense of not having control, or so that was never laid to rest by that?
No.
Do you have any kind of thought processes to help you kind of, you know, deal with the fact that you have no control over how things work?
No, I don't. But I do know that, because you know, we've talked about it being your life, you know, acting is your life and it's all part of it. You've got to get happy with other parts of your life. You know, you've got to develop other strands in your life that, and other stuff that gives, you know, you just have a fuller life and not depend on it for your...
So what kind of things do you do when you're not acting to stay sane?
I write.
And you've been writing for quite a long time as well.
Yeah, but only very recent, only super recently have I gone, you know what, you've got to start putting this out there, and you've got to take a risk that people will not like it, and some people will. And I just haven't had... I have been writing for a while, forever, really, it feels like, but I've only just started going, you know what, you can do this. You really can do this, and you've got to put yourself out there. So that you mentioned the word sanity, and that definitely... I mean, it brings its own kind of craziness, because you doubt yourself every day, just like you do, well, I do with acting. But you doubt yourself every day, but somehow it works, and it's creative, and you really feel like you've used that part of yourself.
So you also kind of talked a little bit about the things you've done in the past in between acting jobs. I take it that's a long time past since you've had to do other things, or what kind of things have you done in between, and how recently?
Oh, a ton of reception work, you know, all that kind of thing. Hilarious, brilliant. You know, just... That actually, you know, it's good to do that kind of stuff. You've got to do it, because I found it really good for my confidence, just in general as a person, because... and also, I learned so much about human beings and expectations, because they were just so happy that a chimp hadn't turned up who can type. You know, I was just slightly better than a chimp that could type. I mean, and I'm not doing chimps down, by the way, but, you know, they were just thrilled. I was upright, clean, yeah, and that I could string a sentence together.
Has being unemployed gotten any easier with time?
Well, yeah, certainly, because I feel like I... There's something about writing that is just as satisfying as acting. Yeah, so I don't go as crazy. We just want to feel useful. You want to feel like you've got a purpose. It's so human.
You know, you've talked earlier about not quite giving up. About that kind of 9 months where you kind of said, "Screw you, I'm off."
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of looked over your shoulder every few minutes.
Do you see me?
Have you since or before ever seriously consider giving up?
No. No, I mean, yes and no, I suppose. Oh God, what do I mean? Have I thought about giving up? Yes, but not... Yes, yeah, I have actually.
An interruption from me here, not to ask you for a favour, to break with tradition, but to say that it's 1 year since I had the idea for the podcast. Yesterday was 365 days since it occurred to me that a podcast having honest conversations with actors might be something that I would like to listen to and hopefully other people might like listening to as well. So in that time, obviously, things have gone from strength to strength, and it's not just been on my hard work, but on the hard work of loads of other people. Firstly, I'd like to thank all of the interviewees. There are a lot more of 13. There are several that haven't even yet been edited and released, but thank you to all of them. They are the most important part of this podcast. That's why people tune in every fortnight to hear the latest episode. Also, thanks to the army, as it now is, of over 40 people who've contributed guest articles to the blog and who should all be individually and collectively proud of the fact that the blog has been nominated for 2 UK Blog Awards. If you'd like to join the ranks of that particular army, by the way, you can find out more about writing for the blog at anything.com/writing. And finally, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, the people who have tuned in, the people who have followed on Twitter, liked on Facebook, joined the mailing list, probably left the mailing list and joined and left again and joined again, who knows. But thank you for sticking with it in the 5 months since those first 2 episodes went out on the 30th of September. So thank you to all of you. The podcast is now the number one acting podcast on iTunes. It's regularly in the top 20 performing arts podcasts on there, alongside content from The Guardian, the BBC and the National Theatre. There have been over 75,000 downloads to date. There's a perfect 5-star rating on iTunes of over 100 people who have done that. So if you're thinking, that sounds great, I'm going to be the one to leave 4 stars or less, I am warning you. I don't know who you are, but I will find you and I will kill you. Back to Justine.
Yes. Yeah, I have actually. But I think that's to do with how I'm feeling in myself. And that I'm talking about while I've been working. I think I've had some stage fright. I found that utterly unsettling and...
So how bad is your... I mean, this is fascinating to me. How bad has that got?
The last job was fine. The job before that, I lost lines. I lost lines and I froze. And that never happened to me before. And my sense of play and my sense of being able to be mindful and present. And I had to battle more to be there. And I would link it a little with maybe, I would link it a lot to how I was feeling about myself at the time and maybe depression. And I think there's that kind of wanting to give up, wanting to run away as opposed to give up. Because give up for me would suggest I'm going to give up because I'm going to go and be a lawyer. Or, do you know, I found something else that gives me purpose. Or, but the more what I'm talking about, it is darker and more and more.
Just run away from it all.
Yeah, just run away. Just run away. It's too. It just got too hard to do. It's funny because, you know, you go out on the stage and you're given. You know something's up when you go, I don't want. You know, it's permission to be looked at, permission to look at me. And for me to have a play in front of you with all these people and tell you a story and maybe take you away from the world for a while or maybe take you into the world a bit more, whatever the sort of play you're doing is. You're either suspending disbelief or you're going, this is completely made up, but we're gonna pretend so well, it's insane. Yeah. And that just the play element went away, and that was to do with me and I guess sadness, and it's hard, you know, because I think when you're a bit sad in your own life, you've got to go in and act, you've got to go and do a play.
So I was going to actually ask a question the reverse of that, which is, do you find that moments where you're not acting, you get more down than you would be if you were? Does acting still keep you up? Or
no.
So there's a kind of a, whenever you go on stage in those times and you feel a sadness, does performing the same way as it did for that 7-year-old girl, does that still make you kind of feel like everything's okay?
No, it's complete. Well, because so the 7-year-old girl wanted attention and used it to prove that she was alive, and now that's kind of changed. You know, I think, you know, I don't use it for that at all. You know, it is, it's a job that I love, and it's about being more present. More, it's not... hang on, how do I explain this? Okay, so the really easy way of saying it is the seven-year-old girl wanted to escape into it, and I don't use it to escape. And I think I look at performers that I love, and I think you're alive. You're so alive. You're not pretending. You're pretending so well to be that person, and that's about being alive. And you're not escaping anything. You're revealing. You're revealing. You're naked. You know. And I think I would. I aspire to that now. If I was told, you know, you can act for the rest of the life of your life, but it means you're not allowed to go to the theatre anymore, I go, screw that. I want to go to the theatre. You know, it's, you know, there's nothing like it. There is nothing like, for me, going to the theatre and going, A View from the Bridge, saw that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I go, okay, yeah.
That works.
That works. I'm so happy to be alive and living in London and have the privilege of being able to have the money to pay a ticket to go and see that.
Have you had many friends who've given up?
I want to say yes. But it's
you've been, erased
it's
them
been
from,
so long.
You've erased them from your memory.
They're
dead
no
to you.
Younger friends of mine. I'm sure I have. You know, of course I have.
Do you try not to hang around with those
losers? Why am I drawing a complete blank on this? Because they've all gone on to do something great, or, you know, they've become agents. Although I always thought, you know, there were, you know, a few people have said that to me, you'd be a great agent.
You know? You would be a great agent.
A good agent, you know, yeah. And you go, that I want... I mean, I love agents, I'm not saying, but you know what they're saying.
You'd be the right mix of greed and untrustworthiness.
Yeah, you shouldn't be. Yeah. Yeah. It's equivalent of, like, you know, your mom.
So,
oh, go on.
So you've had a few and they've gone on and done other things. If you if you weren't an actor and you weren't a writer, I'm going to take that away from you. I'm going to rip those two things from your soul. Do you have any sense what you would do?
I'd love to be a psychologist. I like that because I've done a shit ton of therapy, so I feel like
there must be
a quick conversion course I'd be able to do.
You've been in work experience for years.
Exactly. Dudes, there should be a quick 1-day course I can take, and I'm, you know, a cognitive psychotherapist.
Until somebody walks in with something totally different to you and you're like, oh shit, we didn't cover that.
We didn't do that.
We didn't. Shit.
We didn't do you. I don't know. But yeah, no, I would find it hard to walk away from this. Although, if you're saying I had given up because I'd felt beaten by the profession and I wasn't getting work, I think it is very hard to... It's a real challenge not to be bitter and jealous, you know? That's hard. You know, you've got to really get...
Do you still find yourself... Or have you in the past given in to jealous thoughts?
Are you kidding me? Of course. Oh my God.
Even with friends. I mean, I think we all like to imagine a world where we could possibly... And it's funny because I have this survey online. We've had about 200 people fill it in so far. And the amount of people who say they've never been jealous of a friend shocks me to my very core. Because I have been.
I mean, that's really beautiful. I really like... If you haven't been jealous of a friend, that's really, really... I think that's commendable.
I think they're lying, is what I'm trying to...
I'm wondering, are they lying? Because no matter what, of course, and you have to, it's just human. It's just human. You go, I want that job. And then you sit in that for 5 minutes, that feeling, let it pass, and then you will generally then start feeling pretty happy for them because they're your friend and you love them. But you definitely will have to have at least 5 minutes of, I fucking would love that job. Why did they get that job?
Whenever you don't get jobs then, do you become sad, does it affect you emotionally?
Yes, yes.
Greatly? I mean, what does that process look like?
It depends what the process is, because you know the way, I met a writer in the park today, and we were just talking about quick no never offends, hey? But, you know, that kind of on and on and on and on process.
Heavy pencil, light pencil.
Yeah, we were talking writing, because I've got this plan development, and it's just, oh, God, when am I going to get a decision on this, you know? And that's what's hard to deal with, the uncertainty, because we don't like uncertainty. That's why God's so popular.
Yeah.
Because we just like the kind of big black and whiteness of him / her. Sometimes when I don't get a job that I really, really want, no, every time that I don't get a job that I really, really want feels horrible, and it doesn't ever get easier. Because why wouldn't it? There's no point in going up for a job pretending you don't want it. It's like, yeah, it's like...
It means you care, right?
You've got to.
I didn't get another job, you shouldn't be doing it, I suppose.
No, you are. Well, you're a different type of actor, or you have a different type of attitude. It's just, I can't, that's not how it works for me. I'm too involved with it being a part of my life.
So taking that back one step, the actual being in the room at a casting, at an audition, is that a difficult experience? Is that like the kind of stage fright?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So you know, how do you cope with that in an audition room? What are your audition tactics?
I don't really cope with it, and I'm really bad. But I do realise more and more that they're just asking you to pretend really well. And it's just the hardest bit of the job. You know, you go up for the job. The hardest bit of the job will be getting it and pretending in that room, because they're wearing things like that and they're talking to each other and someone's on a mobile phone and you're like, this is the worst ever. You know, so it's just like, just pretend really, really well that you are a nun in the 19th century. You know, just pretend harder. Like, you know, be
that. Pretend harder.
Just pretend harder. Because how many times have you gone to an audition and gone, I'm going to make this, I'm going to go towards this role. This is this part of a zombie, you know, or not even as ridiculous as that, you know, this nurse who works in casualty in South London. I'm going to try and bring me to her. And it just bring her to you and make her you and see you. Bye, out the door. This is what I do. Because at least you won't be this kind of tall drink of water that walks into the room, because they'll just see, you know, you want to be the cordial, right? You don't want to be all the fucking water. You don't be diluting yourself.
Yeah. You want to be the cordial.
You want to be the cordial, dude.
Want to be the cordial. Just pretend better.
Yeah.
These and other nuggets.
Yeah. Exactly. Pretend better. Yeah. Act. What is it? Troy McClure's book in The Simpsons. Get confident, stupid. Just get confident, stupid.
So what then is the worst thing about being an actor? Because we know why you do it. It's quite clear why you do it and why you still do it. And it's... You talk about how much that's evolved over the years, but what's the shitty thing about acting? What are the shitty things?
Weddings, missing weddings, working nights. I go to bed so early. Like, I know you said you go to bed at 10:15.
But you go to bed about act three.
Those Russian plays, God damn them. What's the worst thing? Taxi drivers asking you, have you been in anything they'd know? And invariably the answer is no.
I just say, what have you seen?
Yeah, I can't think of any bad things.
So, are you still in love with it?
Yeah.
As much as that 7-year-old girl was in love with, for different reasons?
Yeah.
You're still in love with it?
Yeah. That's the problem.
Do you ever get frustrated? Or are you aware of anything being more difficult for you, either in the past or in the present, as a writer or an actor, for having been a woman?
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed some male directors not take me as seriously as actors in the room, or male actors in the room. I've noticed that. I notice there are more male writers, and I notice there are more men in the industry per se. But that's not just about the industry that makes me angry. It's just life. It's life. It is, you know, if you're a woman, you've got to be a feminist these days. And even, yeah, full stop.
So that's kind of, I mean, we're getting very close to the end. You've obviously, because you've worked a hell of a lot of plays, you've worked with a hell of a lot of actors and a hell of a lot of people, I would imagine, who you've looked up to over the years, from the Almeida and onwards. Mm. Do you remember or have you held on to any specific pieces of advice that have been given to you by any of those others along the way?
I really noticed certain actors who can laugh at themselves and be such fun and yet never take the piss out of the work. I think that's something really beautiful. It's a really great quality. They don't mess about. They don't mess about on stage, but they're just such fun during rehearsals. They know how to play and laugh at themselves and take the piss out themselves. You know, I really, really respect that. I've learned that.
If I jump straight to the end of this, which is a very simple word association, I just give you some words and you tell me the first thing that was in your head.
Yeah.
It can be a phrase, a word, it can be a sound. If I get it, if I get enough of it, then I'll move on.
Yeah, right? I love this already.
They're not that good, so I don't want to build it up too much.
Oh, no. Right?
Casting assistant.
Sophie.
Self-tape.
Shit.
Cast read through.
I'm the cunt.
Press night.
Oh, God.
Red carpet.
I wish.
Hollywood.
I wish.
Acting coaches.
I'd like to give them a chance.
Critics.
Necessary evil.
Actor training.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Spotlight.
Necessary evil.
Agents.
I love mine.
Dogs.
Oh, the best thing ever, 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 ever.
All right, slight bonus. Are you in anything at the minute?
No.
And that's it for episode 13, the birthday episode of the Honest Actors Podcast. I feel like I should be thanking people again, but I've already done that. So what I will say is thanks particularly to Justine for her amazing honesty and also for the lovely light lunch she provided when I went to her home to interview her. So thank you, Justine. To everybody else, thanks for listening. As always, like I said, there's a huge announcement going live at 10:30 a.m. 29th of February. Even if it's after the 29th of February, you can find out about it on the website. I'm sure, however, that you won't miss it. 10:30 a.m. massive announcement. You'll hear about it on Twitter, on Facebook, on the website, and of course in a little audio announcement here on iTunes and at inanything.com. Until then, thanks for listening, and hopefully speak to you soon.